Welcome to Ellisons Connects, the official podcast by Ellisons Solicitors, where we bring together expert professionals from a wide range of areas to discuss key developments and trends. Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Ellisons Connects. In this episode, we will be discussing what makes a trusted advisor. I'm Nicola Weldon, partner and head of the Wills, Trust and Probate team, and I'm joined by my colleague, Rachel Dawson, a senior associate within the same team, and we're delighted to be joined by two guest speakers, Gavin Wood, Head of Private Clients at Beckett Financial Services, and Becky Ames, Partner at Larkin Gowan. At Ellisons, we are proud to call ourselves a trusted advisor. This means that we're able to ensure that all our clients' needs are met by being able to engage the advice and assistance of other professional advisors. Becky, I'd be interested to hear whether you think the same.
Absolutely. We can't be everything to everyone. We all know our stuff, but we also know when we don't, and we need to bring in other people and really add value for our clients and bring that team together around them. Most of my clients are owner-managed businesses, so they don't have access to in-house functions such as HR, legal teams, etc. So it's really important to be able to put them in touch with those, and then there's surrounding them with the others, such as the financial advisors, bankers, things like that, to really build that team.
And do you often find that you have meetings all together? Because we find that quite useful to bring everybody together around the same table.
Yes, we do. We're doing far more of that recently, actually. It just saves duplication as much as anything. You've got everyone in the room at the same time, stops messages going backwards and forwards. Things can get lost in translation. Takes much longer, doesn't it, if you have numerous meetings. So if you can get everyone around the table at the same time and actually understand, you know, what are the tax implications of that advice, etc., then it makes things happen. And I think the client is then reassured that everyone is on the same page as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I suppose that, Rachel, in the work that we do when we're doing things like wills with our clients, if we went off and wrote a will in one particular way and it didn't marry up with the financial advice or accountant's advice, we'd be in a bit of a pickle.
Exactly. So I agree. It's better just to get everybody around the table. So from our point of view, ourselves, our financial advisor, our accountant, and then we can just meet all of the client's objectives at the same time.
And Gavin, how do you find it works?
I've found that if you get everyone around the table at the same time as a client, it shows a client that you're taking things seriously, and it forces a client to actually think about it and think, yeah, this is a serious issue. The fact that two or more professionals have got around the table, given up their time to speak to me about this, often focuses their mind as well. Whereas if it's just a chat with one person and you say to them, can you go off and do this, this and this with XYZ accountant or lawyer, it doesn't give them the same level of importance, I think.
Yeah. And I don't know about you guys, but I think building a relationship with our professional advisors is so important so that we can make sure that we can marry up our sort of the person we're referring the client to the best professional advisor.
Yeah, I think the clients trust us to make the right introductions, don't they? And you know which people will suit your client, who they will be able to build that relationship with. Some of them will not have had to have those sort of conversations before, so you don't want to put someone in front of them that won't engage with them, make them feel comfortable discussing things that can be sometimes quite challenging.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah, it definitely helps. It always helps if I say, or I use them myself.
Yeah. I know that the work that we do, Rachel, often our clients, high net worth clients, and it's important for the people we refer our clients onto or bring into the conversations to have that understanding of the work that we're doing as well.
Exactly. I think they feel that if we trust their advice, then they can trust the advice. And I think going back to the relationships, that's really important. And you can have, you know, regulated professionals that have learned what is needed. But I think to have that niche area of, you know, high net wealth understanding, tax understanding, is really important.
I'd agree with that. But I think the important bit when you're looking for a trusted advisor is to look for someone who knows where their knowledge stops. You want to park your ego at the door and think, okay, so for, you know, I have a good understanding of what you do, very good understanding of what Becky and her team does, but I would never go toe-to-toe with either of those teams.
Yeah.
And it's parking your ego and think, okay, I know this much, I don't know that much, let's get someone else involved. And I think clients appreciate that. If you hold your hands up and say, look, I know my stuff here. In this area, I'm an absolute expert, but over there, we need to get someone else in.
Yeah.
Just gives you that credibility. And that's what people are looking for with trusted advisors, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you're in dangerous waters otherwise, aren't you, if you stray out of your areas of expertise.
Yeah. Especially from our point of view, because we're obviously not allowed to give financial advice. Mm-hmm. So it's great if you can see when you're working with a high net wealth client that there is an area where they, you know, need to speak to a financial advisor. And you can say, well, actually, I know that there's this type of product that's available that might save you tax. However, I'm going to need to pass you over straight away for you to explore that further. I can't help you with that.
I think it's a little trickier sometimes for financial planners, because a lot of the exams and the qualifications we need to take stray quite deeply, particularly into the estate planning side of things that you get involved with on the legal side. So there is a tendency for a lot of advisors to think they know it all. And I've known advisors to draft up wills. And you look at the quality of some of those and you think, you really shouldn't have done that. You understand the basics. You think you understand a bit more, but it's not too good at all. So I think more so for us, perhaps, than you, we need to get advisors in.
Well, it's interesting you said that, actually, because recently I've seen a financial advisor actually getting people to put their properties into trust. And they actually did it themselves. Yeah. Okay. And there's obviously consequences of that. And the clients came to see me to fully understand and have it explained to them. And they hadn't had any advice before, you know, actually going ahead. They were just told by the financial advisor, you need to do this. It will save you money. Yeah. Full stop.
Yeah. So it's the same within our own practices, isn't it? Because I expect, like, if you're speaking to someone about a particular area of tax, you might bring in other colleagues.
Yeah.
Depending on what their needs are.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, trust, for example, is not an area that I want to get too involved in, but I know the people in the firm who are expert in that area. So yeah, we have experts within Larkin Gowan that we can bring into the client relationship to add value, and then anything else, particularly financial advice, and that is always a much easier one. There's a very clear line. We're not allowed to give financial advice, so that's easy, where we then build the team around them from external advisors as well. But it is a real group effort.
Yeah. So, Gavin, what would you say you look for in a trusted advisor?
What we're looking for is someone who has demonstrated over a period of time that they know their stuff, that they can engage well with clients, because no matter how much we like to think it's not the case, if you make a recommendation to speak to someone about an issue and that person drops a ball, there's a large amount of reflective crap coming your way and the client doesn't thank you for it. So I think when it comes to looking to build a team of trusted advisors around the client, your tendency is to go for those people who you know have consistently done what they'll say they do. High levels of professionalism, acting with all sorts of integrity and trust, and just getting on and doing the job.
So I think it's really important that we do bring in other professional advisors, because otherwise I feel that we're letting down our clients, because if we don't identify where they need that extra advice, then we're not giving them a proper service. So I don't know if you both agree with that.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think there's also, you want to be able to give them a name of someone that they should talk to as well, and not just say, oh, you need to go and speak to a solicitor about this, because often that means they either won't do it or they might pick the wrong person. So actually we're making our own lives easier if we make these recommendations and guide them along the way. But I think we aren't acting professionally if we don't give our clients the full range of advice that they do need and support on these things. And I think it could very quickly become an issue, actually, if you did neglect to do that. So building that team of advisors around them is so important.
I'd go a stage further than that. I'd say it's borderline negligent. Mm. If you know there's an issue that they need to address with someone else and you don't do it for whatever reason, then it's negligent. And I've known people to do it in the past, and it comes from almost a sense of protectionism. The person involved isn't confident enough in the strength of the relationship that they've got with the client that they daren't let that person go and speak to anyone else for fear of being shown up in what they've said. So they skirt around certain issues just to make sure that they don't look too bad in the client's eyes.
Yeah, that's important. You mentioned earlier, wasn't it, about knowing where our expertise ends and when to pass on to someone else. It's much better to do that than, as you say, sort of skirt around the issues and not give proper advice.
I think there is a lot of responsibility with referring to other professionals, which is why in our private client department, we have a panel that we, you know, only refer to that has been approved.
We're very much the same, because we're regulated, so we have to make sure that we are, we have to document all referrals, we have to make sure that we have, you know, on an approved list, particularly with financial advisors. They have to be independent so that we can be seen to be independent in advising our clients. So there's lots of boxes that we have to tick in that respect, but ultimately that still leaves us quite a large pool that we could bring in. But for me, it really comes down to, it needs to be someone that you can pick the phone up and discuss the matter. And, you know, they will fill those knowledge gaps that you don't have, provide all those extra bits that the client needs and that you're very happy to sit with in front of the client, and you're confident that it's going to be right.
Yeah, right for the client. It's an interesting point you said actually about financial services. So again, being regulated, we would only refer to independent financial advisors. And I think there's a bit of confusion about who is independent, Gavin, and who isn't. There's restricted and
there's
all sorts of titles.
There's restricted, there's independent, there's people masquerading as independent who are restricted. That's one soapbox I could get on and chat about all day long. Probably best we don't cover it in a great deal here, but yeah, definitely go for independent. And even not just within independent, go for someone who doesn't look to just shoehorn clients into something that fits them. Something I think is very important as being a trusted advisor is showing the client that you've really got their best interests at heart and you're in it for the long haul. You're not looking to do a quick job just for the company's benefit to get some fees and to get some money through. You're building that time to have a long-term relationship with them. And as Becky says, it often involves just picking the phone up to other professionals and saying, yeah, I'll have a chat with you about this, knowing that we can give you some guidance and some pointers on it. We may never see the client for several months, but we've given you that help to give to the client and invariably it comes back.
I do rely on other advisors a lot for that sort of thing. And it sort of, you know, it might be a shoe-in for them, it might not with the client, but at least, you know, we're talking to each other and building that relationship so that when it does come to being able to make the referral, you're in a good place.
Yeah, and you're building that trust, aren't you?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Can we talk about unregulated professionals?
Do you have that so much in your accountancy?
Anyone can call themselves an accountant.
I've seen some absolute shockers in the past where people have had advice from their accountant. They haven't had advice from their accountant. They've had advice from borderline mate down the pub. I mean, someone says, I'll speak to so-and-so about this. I say, well, okay, is your mate a chartered accountant? Is your mate a chartered financial planner? Are they a practicing lawyer? Well, if they're not, why are you listening to them? You know, they might be really decent to sink a few pints with, but chances are when it comes to their technical knowledge, it's not going to be there. Yeah, we've seen some absolute shockers in the past where people have had advice from professionals and it's anything but. Yeah. And unfortunately, it then costs the client so much more to unwind that advice.
Yeah. We see that all the time. People trying to do wills themselves online or use unregulated people to write the wills for them. Mm. Again, sort of putting assets into trust because they've been told it's a good idea and they've spent so much money in legal fees for us to have to sort it out because they weren't, you know, made fully aware of what the consequences were of what they were doing. They weren't able to make an informed decision before proceeding.
Yeah, I think there can be a perception, can't there, if you go to the regulated profession in the first place, they might end up costing you more, but that's rarely the case. And actually, it can end up costing you more if you don't untangle
situations. And the ideal scenario for me is that, I mean, I appreciate it's different in the legal sector sometimes, isn't it? But we, you know, tend to have a relationship with our clients over a number of years. And ultimately, we want them to pick the phone up to us before they do anything so that we are able to put them in touch with the right people to be able to make that decision about, you know, inheritance tax planning, what does it look like, things like that. So that's, for me, is what being a trusted advisor to my clients is about, is that they think of me when they're, you know, considering doing something. And then I will go out to my trusted advisors to build that advice around them. But yeah, it takes a long time to build, but once you've got it, it works really, really well.
I think that's where the financial services and the accountancy side has a slight edge over the legal side. Yeah. A lot of what you do on the legal side tends to be more transactional.
Yeah.
Whereas certainly on the service we give our clients, we commit to see them at least once a year to review everything they've got. And it's at those review points we think, oh yeah, your will needs updating. Now we should consider trusts and that sort of thing. But it all stems from that long-term relationship, doesn't it? Built up over, in some cases, you know, 20-plus years.
I think being a trusted advisor, though, especially being a regulated trusted advisor, means that you're not always going to just be able to give the client the answer that they want.
No.
So because obviously we are regulated and we can't just say, okay, fine, we'll put your house into trust. Yeah, that's what you want to do. You want to avoid care fees. You want to save inheritance tax. You're able to say, well, actually, no, you can't do that. This is why. And although they might not like the answer you're giving them, they are actually getting proper advice. Whereas, you know, if they did go down the non-regulated route or try to do it themselves, they may feel like they're achieving something that's not actually legally possible to do. Oh,
that's absolutely spot on. I mean, I've seen a number of clients who've come to me and said, oh, I'm going to do this, this and this because so-and-so said I can. I said, well, you can't do it. And they've almost had to go at me and say, well, what do you mean? I think, well, hang on. 20 whatever years of doing this, exams coming out of my ears, I know what I'm talking about. I can either give you the right advice or tell you what you want to hear.
Yeah.
Either way, I'll charge you the same. Mm. And when you're that blunt about it, they say, oh, okay, well, what should I be doing? And then they open up.
But I think as well, clients need to understand that because we're regulated, we have to maintain our professional development, don't we? So our knowledge is up to date and as current as it can be. It has to be. It's a requirement of our institutes or whatever it might be. So, you know, Joe Bloggs down the street who's chatting to his mate down the pub, telling him what he could do with his property and all that stuff. A lack of qualifications is one thing, but a lack of knowledge is a really dangerous thing.
And even one of the worst things is out-of-date knowledge.
Yeah.
So what that guy was telling his mate down the pub may well have been right 6, 7, 8, 9 years
ago.
But nowadays, it's woefully out of date, just not the right thing at all.
So I think, for example, if somebody comes to Ellison's, they know that they're going to come to a trusted network. So we've got a network of advisors. We've got other colleagues within the firm who we can refer matters to, whether it be corporate, commercial, immigration, conveyancing, the whole manner of different areas of specialisms within the firm. So where, Gavin and Becky, you've spoken about building that relationship up with your clients over the years. We hope to do the same with our clients, so they'll come back to us, whatever their legal need is, and we can then refer them to our colleagues within the firm as well as externally.
And when we're referring to each other, it might not be something that's directly, you know, it might not be our area of expertise, but someone within the firm that we will make sure it goes to the right person and that they will deliver whatever, you know, Gavin or you guys need in that respect. So I think that whilst it might not be work for me personally or even my team, it's something that we can manage within the firm and the same standards of service apply.
And that is very important. You want to make sure that the firm you're dealing with, within it, they act collaboratively as well.
Yeah.
It's not just collaboratively between firms, it's within the firm.
Absolutely. You know,
they've got to have that ability to just deal with their colleagues and pass things over where needed.
And I know some professionals, advisors between them, they will pay referral fees for the work that they get referred and vice versa. I know we don't do that at Ellison's, and I'm assuming that's something that you guys don't do, but do you see it within your respective industries?
Thankfully, it's not as common as it once was. I think most people now realise that if you're going to be seen as being professional, you refer on just a professional basis. Any form of kickback, anything like that nature, clients eventually get whiff of it, and it just seems to sully the relationship. So I think if you can just say, look, we'll pass people to you because we trust you to do a good job and we want nothing for it, and you tell the clients that, they immediately get the extra buy-in. Trust.
We're the same. There's no referral fee arrangements for us, and we're often asked if we want to enter into those, and we're very much no, because I think then there'd be fake referrals, or you would end up making referrals that, or receiving them that just aren't as appropriate or valid as they should be. So, you know, the fact that we're independent and the fact that we don't enter into those sort of arrangements, I think, like you say, reassures clients that we're putting them in touch with the right people.
Yeah, I agree.
At Ellison's, we start that from very early on in the careers of our colleagues. So we have the Ellison's Academy, and they will attend sessions where they're talking about referring work and client care and the importance of that. So hopefully delivering that message early on will mean that they'll be able to develop well into that as they progress in their career.
And I think, I know some of our colleagues, younger colleagues, do lots of their sort of younger networking opportunities and things like that, aren't there?
Yeah, there's young professionals groups and things like that, isn't there? But then the more informal things where you get the teams together of people at different stages of their careers. And we always say, you know, come along, we'll make it fun. So, you know, it's not too heavy, but build those relationships early on, and those people will be your peers throughout your career if you stay in the same geography, and even if you don't, actually, the way we work nowadays. But those will be the people that you can call on and you can bring into client matters and just bounce ideas off as much as anything in those years where you are building your career. So that's certainly never too soon to start.
Yeah, definitely.
That is a very valid point, isn't it? But I mean, I look at all the professional connections who I've known for many years, and they send a lot of stuff away. I met them when I was 23, 24, 25, starting out, and they were very similar. You know, one of the best bits of advice I was given by my boss at the time was, don't try and go straight in at the managing partner of any firm and get work from them, because they've already got their network. So it's all about getting to know people. And a great deal of trust is just built from the social element of getting to know people. You know, because that's where you really find out if people act with integrity. You know, what do they say when the cameras are off them, when the microphone's not there, when they think no one's listening? And after a while, you just get thinking, okay, yeah, this person does know this stuff. They are acting in the right way for the benefit of their clients, not just learning to shaft people all over the place and just do whatever they can. And those things really come out in more social settings when people are relaxed. Because let's not kid ourselves, what we do, we are, in a way, putting on a bit of a front when it comes to dealing with clients sometimes. You have your personal side, you have your professional persona, and we know what to say to people to get them to buy in. But you can only hold that up for so long. And after a while, that facade drops away. And if you're not credible, if you're not authentic, if you're not, you know, genuinely a decent person doing things with integrity, eventually it comes out. And it's better to learn that at an early stage when you look to build your network rather than too late down the line.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. It is, I think, because when you start off and you're quite, you're younger, it's quite intimidating, can't it be, sometimes when you're starting to build relationships with people you don't necessarily know, or walking into networking events where you don't really know people. And it's over the years, like you, just like you say, you build those relationships to the stage we are now.
Yeah, I think it's just about finding things that work you know, more informal stuff, isn't it? And charity events that you can enter as teams are always really good for that sort of thing. That's where we've seen, you know, my team have really built good relationships with other teams of professionals. So it's just making it okay for them to do that. When I was training, we weren't allowed to really do any of that stuff. And then you became a manager and you had to suddenly have this network. So I firmly believe the sooner you start, the easier it is.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I think also sometimes people put too much pressure on it. As if, you know, oh, I've got to build a network from day one, and within a month it's got to be 30 strong. It's really about finding people that you like, trust and know will do a good job.
And actually, if you have 30, that's too many, because you're not going to keep up contact with all of them, are you?
Absolutely.
You know, it's about having a select few, actually, that you can have frequent catch-ups with and understand what's going on and look for the opportunities together. And you have each other's backs, don't you, as well? You know, if we're not competing, we're just there to help the client as a collective, really. And referring stuff to each other is about as much as helping the client as it is helping each other.
Perhaps I think on that point, actually, it's important that when we are working together with other professionals that we're not competing, because sometimes I have been in situations before where it almost feels as though the other professionals sort of competing against you, and you certainly don't want that, because you're all there to do the best for the client.
It goes back to what I said before, right? Just put your ego at the door. You know, I would not sit with an estate planning client opposite you at the table and go toe-to-toe or try and score any points, because what's the point? It's just not going to happen. Yeah, so ego at the door and just give the best for the client.
Thank you for listening to Ellison's Connects, and many thanks to Rachel, Gavin and Becky for joining me in this episode. Any additional guides and insights we have mentioned today will be available on our website. We hope you've found this episode insightful. If you would like to discuss anything further on this subject, then please do get in touch via our website, ellisonsolicitors.com. Please don't forget to subscribe to our podcast and follow us on our social channels to keep up to date with latest news and insights. Any information shared on this podcast was accurate at the time of recording. However, we advise speaking to your usual Ellison's advisor to make sure there hasn't been any changes since. Thank you to podtalk.co.uk for producing this podcast series. Thank you.